Although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI.
FBI has been in turmoil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
By saying that the organization was in disarray. Those were lies, plain and simple.
I had a dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner.
And the president begins by wanting to talk about my job.
And he wanted to stay on as the FBI head.
So I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, three times you've already asked me to stay or talked about me staying.
And I said, I'll consider, we'll see what happens. But we had a very nice dinner.
He's looking to get something in exchange for granting my request to stay in the job.
A dinner was arranged. I think he asked for the dinner.
Did you in any way initiate that dinner?
No. I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn?
No. Next question.
I took it as a direction. I mean, this is the President of the United States.
This Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse.
But what I think he meant by the cloud was the entire investigation is taking up oxygen and making it hard for me to focus on the things I want to focus on. The ask was to get it out that I, the President, am not personally under investigation.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. History in the making. Possibly prosecutable allegations now on the record. Comey v. Trump is not yet a court case, but it is a political confrontation unparalleled in the history of the young 21st century, and maybe even beyond. As you heard there, James Comey, former FBI director, spoke of his firing, his strange and awkward and possibly impeachable encounters with President Donald Trump, and Comey spoke eloquently about the whole case of Russian intervention in the 2016 election. As for the historical context of this remarkable day, let me give you a quote from the last century. Quote, "And if these allegations prove to be true, what they were seeking to steal was not the jewels, money, or other precious property of American citizens, but something much more valuable, their most precious heritage, the right to vote in a free election." That quote is from the late Senator Sam Ervin, talking about the Watergate burglar. Senator Sam Ervin, who was at the center of the hearings that ended in the resignation of President Richard Nixon back in 1974. Lots to talk about this hour. Joining me from Washington is Amy Sabrin, retired partner from the law firm Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meagher & Flom, where she represented many public officials and executives in the Department of Justice and congressional investigations. She's in Washington, D.C. Amy, your impressions of what you've heard on this very historic day?
Well, John, I think we witnessed some very significant history today. We heard the former director of the FBI say that the President of the United States could not be trusted to tell the truth, and therefore he felt compelled to memorialize his meetings with the president. The other thing that I don't want to lose focus on while we're discussing things such as obstruction of justice is that the president's repeated meddling in an ongoing investigation is highly abnormal and is universally understood to be inappropriate. And the president surely understood that. Because he made such a fuss during the campaign about Loretta Lynch's meeting with Bill Clinton. So he understood that even having relatively brief and benign conversations with a public official conducting an investigation is inappropriate.
Well, there's a great exchange with the Senator Mark Warner talking specifically about the idea that, here's James Comey making a character evaluation of Donald Trump and suggesting that he might lie.
What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President, President-elect, personally, and then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
How important is that, especially since Comey was asked if he ever had that suspicion of President Obama or even George W. Bush, both of whom he worked for?
Well, I think it's significant in and of itself, the sheer number of communications he had with President Trump in the course of 4 months. He reported 9 one-on-one communications. In the course of 4 years, he had 2 such communications with President Obama.
Let's talk about the idea of where Robert Mueller is going to go in his investigation. Based on what we've heard today, would you say there's no question that obstruction of justice is going to be one of the targets of the special counsel's investigation?
I believe it will be. Certainly, Mr. Comey's testimony contained the building blocks of a potential obstruction charge. First of all, the chronology is key. You have to look not only at the president's words to Mr. Comey, but what was happening around them. And one significant fact that gets glided over sometimes is that on January 26th, the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, informed the White House counsel that not only did DOJ have evidence that Michael Flynn had lied to Vice President Pence about his conversation with the Russian ambassador, but significantly here, that Flynn had been interviewed by the FBI the day before. So she comes and delivers that information to the White House on the 26th, and the very next day, President Trump invites Comey to an unprecedented private dinner in which he repeatedly asks if he wants to keep his job and says he expects loyalty. Second, another significant building block that comes out of Comey's testimony is that the president repeatedly requested that these conversations be held in secret. Third, as I said, there's the sheer volume of contacts. And finally, the president ultimately did fire Comey and said that he did it because of the Russian matter.
I'm not a lawyer, and I'm, you know, very lay here. If someone is investigating you on a subject that you think is inappropriate, and then you fire them, and it turns out that, you know, that investigation involves you in something that is perhaps a high crime and misdemeanor or even just a crime. That is obstruction of justice, isn't it? You fire somebody who's trying to get you.
Well, you have to be have a motive of what the statute calls corrupt intent, the intent to do it for a bad purpose. The intent that the courts sometimes describe it as that the conduct would have the natural effect of interfering with the investigation. That being said, Mr. Comey's statements and testimony have some building blocks that the president could use here in his defense, one of which was his statement that he wanted to lift the Russian cloud because it was interfering with his ability to act on behalf of the country. So he could argue that his motive wasn't corrupt. It wasn't to interfere with the investigation. It was to get on with the business of governing. And the second building block in his defense would be, as Senator Rubio pointed out, that he used the word, "I hope you can drop the Flynn investigation." And he only asked Comey to disclose, as again, Senator Rubio pointed this out, he asked Comey to disclose publicly that which he had already told the president and congressional leaders, that the president himself was not the subject of a counterintelligence investigation.
Legally, that doesn't eliminate the possibility that he was under investigation. It just means not on counterterrorism. And the word personally was used. Does that narrow things, and that there could be other investigations that Trump was being investigated for, but this word personally, it makes it a little bit ambiguous?
I think that's correct. And I think Mr. Comey even pointed out that some people in his senior leadership group felt that there was a possibility that the investigation could expand to include the president because they were investigating his campaign. And after all, he was the candidate and the head of the campaign, and didn't want Mr. Comey to tell the president that.
Because I'm such a history nut, I couldn't resist using that Sam Ervin quote talking about the Watergate burglars. In this particular case, we're talking about Russians interfering with the elections. How much does that increase the voltage of this investigation versus other investigations of sitting presidents, in your view?
Well, I think it would be unprecedented. I don't know that any sitting president has ever been implicated or suggested or investigated for the fact that he or anybody reporting to him or working for him was colluding with a foreign power to disrupt an election.
So the stakes are higher here.
Yes.
Absolutely. The question of how many times Comey had one-on-one discussions or awkward encounters with the president. How alarming is that to you, or surprising is that to you, or you know, in your legal career, how does that fall outside of what you would have expected?
It's very surprising. I have actually represented a president of the United States. I represented Bill Clinton. I represented a Republican Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, in investigations. And I've never seen this level of interaction on a specific investigation. You know, on general law enforcement policy is one thing, but on a specific investigation, let alone one involving the president himself or people who report to him or work for him, it's unprecedented. And as I said before, it's universally understood to be highly abnormal and inappropriate because it undermines public confidence in the integrity and independence of the agencies charged with a fair and impartial administration of justice. And it taints the results of this particular investigation, regardless of its outcome.
Before we go, let's listen to the short 22-second cut of James Comey talking about why he was fired, the reason that was given, all the coverage I remember giving to that Rosenstein memo, that it was a lie, pure and simple. Listen.
And although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple.
What do you think that means, that Rosenstein, within the Department of Justice, was made to write a memo that he perhaps knew was a lie?
That's one of the mysteries here, and I'm sure this is something Mr. Mueller will be investigating, the circumstances surrounding Mr. Comey's firing.
Amy Sabrin is a retired partner from the law firm Skadden Arps. She represented many public officials and executives in the Department of Justice and congressional investigations. And we're hearing from you at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
Hello, I'm looking at Mr. Comey, and he's telling the truth. He's not hesitating. He's not squirming around. And the best thing he's saying so far, no other country should tell America how to think.
This is Laura from Camas, Washington. This isn't so much an accounting of James Comey or even an accounting of Donald Trump, but it's more a criticism of the American people and their lack of information and knowledge in voting for this man.
This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by LegalZoom.com, helping small business owners get started with incorporation, LLCs, DBAs, and nonprofits, while providing ongoing legal advice through its network of independent attorneys. More information available at LegalZoom.com/takeaway.
Returning now to our top story, the historic testimony by James Comey before the Senate Intelligence Committee. If that was Act 1, 2, and 3 of a Shakespearean saga, tragedy, comedy, call it what you will, Act 4 was the president's personal attorney responding.
Contrary to numerous false press accounts leading up to today's hearing, Mr. Comey has now finally confirmed publicly what he repeatedly told President Trump privately. That is, that the president was not under investigation as part of any probe into Russian interference. The president, Mr. Comey also admitted that there is no evidence that a single vote changed as a result of any Russian interference. Mr. Comey's testimony also makes clear that the president never sought to impede the investigation into attempted Russian interference in the 2016 election.
His personal attorney, Mark Kasowitz, had an extensive statement that he delivered to the White House press corps in Washington, D.C. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, observed that statement, as did so many of the rest of us. First of all, Todd, your impressions.
Well, you have the president's personal lawyer and not the White House counsel. We should draw that distinction. That, to many people, will be a fine distinction, but in terms of the law, it's an important one. If there ever were a case where Donald Trump were being investigated for obstruction of justice or collusion or any of the other things that have been possibilities in this ongoing confrontation, it would be his personal lawyer and his personal legal fortunes that would be at stake there. So that's part of the distinction there.
So just to interrupt for a moment, people should not conclude, even cynics should not conclude, that because this is the president's personal lawyer, that nobody in the administration would defend him. That's not what's going on here at all. This is normally how this was done.
No, I hesitate to describe any of what's going on as normal because
good,
it's
yeah.
not. But under a legal framework, from this journalist's perspective, it's would not be unusual for a personal lawyer to be involved in this way and not a White House counsel. But it was a very lawyerly and fairly incendiary statement from Mark Kasowitz that he made at the National Press Club, John, not only accusing James Comey of being sort of a common leaker for his own admission that he took his memos and his recollections of his discussions with the president and sent them to a friend with the idea that it would be leaked to the press, but much more glaringly, a quote from Kasowitz saying that the president never in form or substance suggested or directed Mr. Comey to stop investigating anyone, including suggesting that Mr. Comey, quote, let Flynn go. Now, that's a direct challenge to James Comey's sworn testimony, saying that James Comey lied.
All right, let's take those in order. First of all, the idea that James Comey, according to Mark Kasowitz and according to Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is a common leaker. Let's play, first of all, the exchange with Senator Susan Collins at the Comey testimony, where Comey admits to sharing with a colleague information which essentially triggered the appointment of a special counsel.
I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
And was that Mr. Wittes?
No. No.
Who was that?
A good friend of mine who's a professor at Columbia Law School.
Now, let's hear what Kasowitz said about that. You said a moment ago, common leaker is how he was referred to. It's actually much more insulting even than that. Listen to what Kasowitz said.
And from before this president took office to this day, it is overwhelmingly clear that there have been and continue to be those in government who are actively attempting to undermine this administration with selective and illegal leaks of classified information and privileged communications. Mr. Comey has now admitted that he is one of these leakers. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he unilaterally and surreptitiously made unauthorized disclosures to the press of privileged communications with the president.
Strong words, again, from the president's personal lawyer, not a prosecutor. You would expect him to use words that are as strong as possible in defense of his client, who is Donald Trump. Part of the entire political pushback, John, on the idea of the Russian investigation, election meddling, or even cooperation, collusion, or alignment at any level in this investigation from the White House and from their allies has been attacking leaks, not often attacking the veracity of the news itself, although the president has accused people of trafficking in fake news, saying that the entire Russia investigation was fake news at one point, but attacking the leaks and the leakers themselves. So this seems to be of a piece with that strategy. James Comey answered that question in the committee and said that these were his personal recollections of a conversation that he had, that they weren't classified, and that he had every right to put them out when he was no longer FBI director.
Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, on the White House response, President Trump's personal lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, responding to the testimony of former FBI Director James Comey, perhaps raising more questions than it answers. Todd Zwillich, thanks so much.
You got it, John.